Make May your month for big cash winnings at your neighborhood Washington Gold Casino. Stop by the Silver Dollar Casinos in SeaTac, Renton, and Mill Creek and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
All right, it is Brock and Salk. Hope you guys are having a great morning. This hour is brought to you, of course, by Precor Home Fitness. We've been waiting to do this for a little while. Todd Lywicki is sitting down with us, the president and CEO of Seattle Hockey Partners and the guy who will be in charge of, ultimately, this new hockey franchise when they get going, we think, in October of 2020. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. You have been waiting a while because I think I missed last week, and I told you both I slept in the parking lot last
night.
Well,
we just know you were saying hello to all of your best friends on the way here. I've never met anyone who more people claim as their best friend than you.
Well, why not? You know, life's short. Why not have friends?
I would like to learn that skill because I don't have it, and Todd absolutely does. How did this all come back? How did this all come together for you being here?
Well, you know, I think that I was here. So I was here for a good long while. And when you're in this business, you live in dog years. And so, and it was remarkable. My kids really were raised here. But I was, when the Sonics left, I fostered this belief that it could, that, you know, that. First, this community didn't deserve not to have an NBA or an NHL team. And I always believe you could get Key Arena to work. And while we're going to build effectively a new arena, there's something cool about renewal and renovating and recycling, because that's, we're in the capital of the world of that. And so this really came about because my brother, in many ways, had the courage to push and push and push. And so the most important thing that happened is the arena got done, and then a great owner in David Bonderman stepped up, and then a remarkable, perhaps more remarkable than the arena or the owner, was what the fans did that day.
Yeah, they stepped up.
They always have, right?
Yeah, you've said this a number of times.
Where were you watching all that?
Well, I was actually in meetings at my day job, and, you know, my brother writes me a note because I wasn't responding to his calls, and he said, it's an emergency.
So, that's what he does?
Yeah.
Yeah, Damon does the same thing. You know, I don't respond to a text. He's like, dude, big deal. Call back now.
Yeah.
That's a brotherly love thing.
And by the way, it was an emergency. It was a big deal, and I did call him right back, and it was remarkable, and I knew that something great was going to happen, but to think that in that day those things happen, and that will forever be a legacy of this franchise.
You've done a few different things along the way in different markets, and you've talked about the fan base here. Can you put it in words? The essence of the Seattle sports fan to you is what?
Well, they're different because Seattle's different, and, you know, the people who came here were different, and I always think that fan bases are really generational. So if you go back and look at the essence of people who came here are different. Most people stayed back. I grew up in St. Louis, and they said, hey, go on. Send us a letter and tell us how it is. And the people who came here pioneered. And so these fans were different, and they were certainly different with the Seahawks. And once we got that in the flow, they became the greatest fans in all the NFL and maybe the greatest fans in all the world. And then the Sounders, the best fans in all the MLS and the best. So I've always believed in the fans here, and they did it again. And, you know, I'm inspired to be working for them now.
I'm mostly excited about the hockey element of this. I mean, I'm a hockey fan since birth, essentially, and so I'm excited, A, that there's going to be a team, but watching Vegas this year, all of a sudden there's hope that that team could be pretty good, like right off the bat. They've changed some of the rules. You took a Tampa Bay franchise that had never done much of anything until you got there. You guys end up becoming a Stanley Cup contender every year. How'd you do that?
Well, you know, so I've seen a lot of games, so have you, and I think when you suddenly think you can pick players and draw plays, that's where it's dangerous. He might be able to, but I certainly...
Not in hockey, he can't, though.
Well, we're going to get him there, but I think it's instinctive. But, you know, my partner there was Steve Yzerman, longest-serving captain in the history of, you know, North American sports. He was the captain of the Red Wings for 20 years. He had only been in the front office 2 years, but he around him was a good cap contract guy. Around him were great scouts and others, and then it was his golden gout that took us, and now it's not just, you know, I actually have them in my pool as winning it all, and I think that they're up 3-1, and but it was remarkable because it wasn't just a hockey team, it was a community that was about to lose a franchise, and they were about to leave, make no mistake, they were, those losses were unsustainable, the fan base had been disconnected, and it was fun to reconnect it, and it was really instructive. and it will help me here. This is certainly a bigger market in many ways, and it's a market that's on fire, but some of those same principles that we use there will be used here.
When you left here, and it was telling, you two were chatting, and Mike was telling you a little bit about his experience when he left, and now he's been back, and he's a Seattleite through and through. When you left here, and you left the Seahawks, right? You left Pete and John,
yep.
and you kind of fostered that thing, and then you left. Was there always a part of you that wondered if you would ever get back in some capacity?
Yeah, and we kept a home here, and you know, I there were two decisions I made when we left here, but it was a chance to really do something remarkable, and it was a chance to be. I had a little bit of the ownership action there, and then to go to the NFL and be Roger Goodell's right hand guy. But you know, we longed for the Pacific Northwest, and even this was a hard decision because I had a good job. I had a very interesting job, and I was learning new things at the NFL. But my son said to me one day, "Dad, really? I mean, how can you not do this? You know the game of hockey. You love the game of hockey. You play it. It's your brother. It's a town we love." And he was right. And this week it occurs to me that he was really right. And I couldn't be more happy to be back.
That's Todd Leiwicki sitting down with us here in our studio on Brock and Salk. What's the most important position you will hire for?
Well, I think, you know, that's going to be the GM. And I think Las Vegas did a great job in hiring George McPhee, who I've known a good long while. You know, he had real success with the Capitals, but he also had some real challenges. And he ended up leaving there, not under his choice. And so that was a really interesting piece for him, is he was ready for redemption. And he came in and has done a terrific job. They're four lines deep. Their fourth line could be their first line. But more than anything, they play with such fun. They're not afraid. They're having fun. And as I always say, you know, the skate is curved. And teams that are having fun just inherently lean in and go faster. And teams that are a little bit on their heels, that skate doesn't go as fast, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, one of the things we've got to do is we've got to teach this game because it's a brilliant game. But it's a game of a lot of subtleties. And so I was watching with a friend the other night, and he wasn't a huge hockey fan. And I said, look, when Victor Hedman reaches like that for a puck, it's a risk-reward. Because if he doesn't get it, it's going the other way. And these guys today are, the game is so fantastic. The game is so fast that the risk rewards happen all over the ice, and they're subtle, but they're brilliant, and they're millisecond decisions.
It's funny. I was saying to Brock earlier that the two most important jobs I think you will hire for is one, the GM, and then two will be whoever does color commentary on television.
Yeah.
That I've never played hockey. I learned everything I know about the game from watching, well, first Derek Sanderson and then Andy Brickley explain the game to me over television, over the entirety of my life. I would think that would be right there in terms of most important jobs you've got to hire for.
Well, we can't put it all on either one of those positions. We've got to have, for the GM, a great structure that he walks into, and we've got to be more than one color position away from teaching because we've got to get this. But this market is ready to fall in love with this game, and there are already people here who love this game, and the people who signed up love this game. They wouldn't have done it literally 2.5 years out. So, but there's a lot of others we get to teach, and that's a great privilege, and it's a fun game to teach.
Well, that's pretty fun. It was quite a while ago, actually, that I was in the office with you and Martha Fuller trying to figure out what my life was going to be after the NFL was done, and to kind of circle around and have Todd Leiwicki here, president and CEO of the Seattle Hockey Partners, with us is a little bit surreal, to be honest with you. But I'm curious, is it bittersweet with Las Vegas? Bittersweet in the sense that, man, they have had so much success. But I'm going to guess the rest of the owners and the rest of this hockey business are looking at this going, I don't know if the structure of our expansion thing is maybe the way it's going to be when these Seattle guys come rolling around.
Yeah, it's one of the things we're actually negotiating with the league. Because when they grant you an expansion team, it comes with terms. But I will tell you this. That's a very astute question. I will say this, that I think the GMs are going to be a lot smarter. I think they're going to be smarter on play, how they expose players. I think you're going to see them making moves well in advance. So we won't operate in the same conditions as Las Vegas. But, hey, bring it on. We're going to get really smart people. There's not a lot of George McPhees out there, but there's got to be one other. You were asking me earlier about Steve Yzerman, who I served with. I mean, there's only one Steve Yzerman, but we're going to find that next great leader, and we're going to put him into an environment, and we want to create winning here, not just for a year, though, over the long term.
Okay, I want to stick with the hockey. We'll come back to the hockey, but I think this is a perfect place to take a little step off of the hockey and go back to then what you did with John and Pete. Okay, because, you know, you're going to look for that same combination. You're going to look for that GM and that coach and everything else, and you did it then. We heard from your brother, by the way. Do you know he told us the story about the backyard and the gardener and everything? Oh yeah, he shared the whole thing with us. We love having Tim on the air. But you go back to that, and then all of a sudden you watch what they're doing from Tampa. Like, you're watching this thing grow in Seattle. Were there a couple moments that really stood out to you in their run to the championship?
Well, you know, I mean, I have a little bit of history. I understand the history. And fact is, the Seahawks moved. They were down in Los Angeles. There was butcher block paper on their offices in Kirkland. And so I can't forget that. And I think that, you know, there's a guy named Bob Whitsitt who actually stepped in and helped convince Paul to buy the team. A guy named Bert Cold was involved. And so the history of that was remarkable. And there Paul actually saved the team and did this unbelievable thing. He put it to a statewide vote. The Mariners had failed in the county, were overridden by the state legislature and the governor, and they saved the day and kept baseball here, and thank goodness they did. But the Seahawks had to go the hard way, and they put it to a state vote, and most people say it will never work. And then they started talking soccer, but they saved the team. And then to see us get to the point where we weren't winning just didn't feel right. And so there were difficult decisions to be made there. Jim Moore is a friend of mine. He still is, but that was not a good day for me. A lot of people criticized me for how they went down, and I apologized to him. Those were really tough decisions, but we felt once and for all getting that place aligned. And so then we did this unusual thing. We hired a coach and let him actually sit in on the final interviews with the GM, and he picked that. He picked his boss. And then there was alignment, and alignment is the most important thing in the world. You watch the crew boats. We're renting a houseboat on Portage Bay. You see the crew boats, and it's not always the biggest and strongest. It's those who row in alignment. And I think they have been aligned, and I think they've had unbelievable success, and they did the thing that everyone dreamt of. They brought the Super Bowl home, and it's the championship and the trophy, and it's really remarkable.
I don't know that I want to ask this next question. Uh-oh. Because I know it's going to end up trying to change my worldview, because Todd is a very positive guy, and yet you worked for somebody that I think a lot of people, myself included, don't care for all that much. What was it like to work for Roger Goodell?
Yeah, I am a positive guy. You know, and I had a reporter call me who covered the NFL, and I felt a little liberated to speak. And, you know, it's like, you know, this all sounds like pablum. You're just too, well, I'm positive. And, you know, there's a story written about my life as I grew up, and I lost two mothers before I was 18 to cancer. And you either come out of that a total pessimist, or you say, I'm going to make every day count and be positive, and it's how you look at it. So when I looked at the NFL and looked at Roger, who does get, you know, quite a bit of, he's a lightning rod for the league, but he's the guy that lays down on the track and takes it. He's a remarkable guy. I have a picture actually on my phone right here of him as a kid, 6 years old, sleeping with a football. I saw the letter he wrote his dad in college saying, Dad, I'm going to become the NFL commissioner. And he did all those things, and he's done remarkable things for the league. You know, the other side of it is he's done remarkable things for the players. They're the partners in this whole enterprise. They're 50-50 partners. And so the league is the most successful league in the world, and being around it at that level was fascinating.
And your conversation with him about taking this job was what?
Well, it wasn't one, but that's another good. See, I knew, man, you were going to – you know, it was difficult because he and I, we had – a unique relationship. And, you know, I had this amazing experience with him. Mr. Allen came to the league meeting where they were electing the commissioner, and they didn't allow, it was owners only. I happened to be in the room next to Roger. I didn't know him very well, but I heard him the second day and they're stirring. So I went and knocked on his door, and he was in there. He was in his boxer shorts, and he opened the door. I went and sat down with him, and we talked, we had this fantastic discussion, and he wasn't sure what was going to happen. He thought, you know, maybe I don't become the commissioner and I have to leave the league. And he was very curious about what the world. And then all of a sudden my phone rings, and it was Mr. Allen's guy, and he said, hey, we're leaving. The meeting's over. And then Paul sent a note saying Rogers has been elected commissioner. And I looked at him and didn't say anything. And, you know, if you know me and my brother, we're pretty hard at, I mean, so I didn't say anything. And I just said to Roger, the meeting's over and I have to leave. And he wrote me a note that night saying, thanks for being such a gentleman and not saying anything, because there's a moment there where, sure enough, Dan Rooney came and knocked on his door 30 minutes later and said, sir, you're the commissioner. So I had a moment like that. We climbed Rainier together. So I knew him and I knew him well. But when he heard how all this was lining up, he said to me, you got to go do it. Because I went to him as a friend and said, hey, what's your advice? And I think, you know, again, another moment with Roger where he just always tries to do the right thing. So he didn't think about his interests or breaking in a new chief operating officer. By the way, my replacement is a woman named Marianne Turk, the highest ranking woman at sports now. And I'm very proud of that because I help recruit her. But a great thing happened when I left, because I believe diversity is one of the most important things, and NFL gets high marks on that one.
We're talking to Todd Lewicki here on Brock and Salk. You used a word earlier I wanted to come back to, and that was renewal, when you were talking about what happened in Tampa. And I know you were involved there, and maybe I don't understand all of it, but in some of the downtown redevelopment, sat on a council to work on what they were doing to redevelop the city. I want to know about what you did there, because it sounds like it's going to come in awfully handy as the city works with you guys to redevelop what's happening in Seattle Center here.
Well, there were definitely challenges in Tampa when we got there. We had left what was here a mild recession, and when we went down there, we walked into a mild depression. I mean, the economy was really... But there were upsides to it. There was a lot of land around the arena, and I worked for a brilliant guy, Jeff Finnick, who started the Magellan Fund. He was from Boston. He started the Magellan Fund. He ran it when he was 31 years old. So this was – but we bought the land and found greater purpose, and I think purpose is such an important thing. You can look at bottom lines and look at the right-hand column and profit and loss, but purpose. And so our purpose was not only to – try and make a team work in a community, but we also developed a major real estate plan, did it with our friends here from Cascade. So Michael Larson, who works for Mr. Gates, came down and saw what we were doing, and they jumped in. And today, that's a multi-billion-dollar project that's going to change that city forever. And Jeff then created Purpose. So every night where they play, something much greater is going on. They did a community program. We did a community program there that was life-changing for me. And, you know, I'll tell you about it someday. I won't bore you now. But its purpose is such an important part of any enterprise, and we've got to give our enterprise real purpose.
So what does the vision look like now for Seattle Center? What will Seattle Center look like in 10, 15 years?
Well, we've got to carefully cultivate that, and we're not walking into a suburban parking lot. This is a vibrant, alive community with that people live and work every day. So the first thing we have to do is tune into what's already going on there. And then there's going to be a chance with our neighbors, those people who live there, with our neighbors at Seattle Center, with the Space Needle, with all the other things going on, to start to shape a vision. And, you know, there was a vision of Seattle Center, and a lot of it came true. Some of it hasn't just yet, and we get to help push that and make that happen.
Hey, Todd, how about a sense of timing here? I think a lot of us, and one of the things that Mike and I, really from when your brother stepped in here, you know, it was cool. We got a chance to meet him. We met the other side that was bidding on it. We, you know, tried to figure some things out. But Mike and I both, and just, yeah, that these guys are players, man. They've been there. They've done it. They know how to align this thing, in your words. And now there's a lot of us sitting here going, okay, what's the timing? Okay, when is this going to look like? And you know the pains of the NBA being gone. And it's been 10 years and all of the pain and all the hurt of that. But what is the next step? What is the timing for you to sink your teeth in and then for all of us to follow as fans and doing our jobs? What are some of the milestones we look for, yardsticks?
Well, I came last week from my announcement and didn't leave. I thought I was going to go back and have an orderly pack up of my personal effects. And you know what? I didn't leave because that's how busy it was that day, and it's been busy every day. I've had some experience doing this, but – you know, I still have butterflies. Like, it's exhilarating, and it's daunting, and it's scary, but it's, you know, and those are all healthy things to feel. But we're going to begin shaping this. We're going to begin pulling the framework of a plan together. We're working today on on specific and granular timelines. When's the right time to bring on that general manager? Building out a training facility. We're going to have a spectacular training facility. It'll be somewhere in this community, and it's going to do more than just host our practices. We think it'll become a really important, and so that's certainly, we need to pick a name. We need to pick our colors. We need to pick a logo. We've got to make sure the arena gets built right and can not only host our games, but a myriad of events, and eventually becomes a brilliant home for the NBA, because I think that the NBA coming back is inevitable. But right now, our focus has to be on making this franchise work and doing it right. And these are serious responsibilities, and we don't have a day to waste. So we're going to become really good communicators. I've got we right now are a staff of three. And it's kind of fun. The culture is really good.
Who is the staff right now?
Well, it's John Rizzardini, yep. Who is the chief operating officer at the Seahawks. It's Lance Lopes. And then we've got other folks who are just starting to come in. We've got a brilliant guy, Scott, who's running our ticket side. And then we've got actually my nephew's there. He's a hockey player. And so he was missing yesterday in action midday. And he came back after lunch, and his hair was a little wet. And I said, what, have you been swimming in the pool? I knew where he was. He went and played hockey and took a shower. And you know what? You don't get demerits for doing that. You get, like, that's a good thing.
How quickly, my last thing here, and again, I'll make it a little bit personal. I'm going to jump aboard this thing. There's no question about it. This is what we do. And Mike's favorite sport is hockey. So
along with baseball. I don't want to be a liar. Yeah, that's not fair. Baseball's my favorite sport.
I'm a sport. I love sport. And I love curling. And I love baseball. I love football. I love the Sounders.
When I was a kid, we didn't fight about these things. No. It was just, it's baseball season. Yeah. And then it's basketball season. And hockey season. And then it's football season. We just did it.
Yep. How quickly can I climb the learning curve as a hockey fan?
Well, this game is so great. And it's a game I've loved my whole life. When I was here, I played it. When I was a kid and went through that adversity, it was a game that helps change my life and kept me on the straight and narrow. I remember my mom, being very ill, and hockey was my respite. And my brother taking me to a St. Louis Blues game. And they had huge success early on. The second year, they played the Boston Bruins in the Stanley Cup Finals, and that great picture of Bobby Orr flying midway through, that was Noel Picard who tripped him. Jacques Plante in the goal. I've loved this game my whole life, and the privilege of teaching the game to a community, and many, many people here know it, but there's others like you who will have, and I can't wait to do it, because it's a game that is so brilliant. It is ballet. It has got its toughs. It's played by fantastic young men who started riding buses when they were 12 and sacrificing huge things in their life. And by the time they pull on the NHL sweater, they're trained not just to be great hockey players, but great human beings. And they're going to come and join this community. And they're going to work with us to make this community better. I can't wait.
What can you possibly add after that? Man, that is a really, really fun, powerful view of what hockey's going to be.
How about my draft profile?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, don't forget those hockey players who've been riding the buses since 12. They wake up at like 3:30 in the morning in order to do it because it's the only time they can get ice space.
They do, and they travel with parents. Awesome. And there was a tragedy that recently happened in Saskatchewan, and it broke everyone's heart. I was watching the Lightning play in Carolina, and they played the Canadian anthem that night. You couldn't just help but be moved, because not just those lives lost, but the circumstance of riding those buses on those long, roads and toiling for something they loved, and then to have that happen. But what happened in Las Vegas, that team was so important to that town at that moment, and I think all those players truly became deeply embedded that day in the community, and they made a difference. And I think that's the charter of teams. And we have great owners of teams here. The Mariners and John Stanton, Paul Allen, Adrian Hanauer, the Storm have been doing it, and Ginny and her team have. So the world's changed here. We have a phenomenal, and our job is to fit into that community.
Well, we're unbelievably excited. Thank you for coming in. It was great to see you again. I will now hear from all of your best friends around Seattle.
Hello to all my friends out there.
They will all tell me, oh, I'm so glad you saw
me. You're throwing me out of here. I know I showed up late, and now you guys are throwing me.
I could spend another half hour with you. Brock, you want to blow out your draft profile? There's no amount of time I wouldn't spend with
you.
He's
got to
go. All right, we got to go to the draft profile. Brock's got a guy today that I'm not sure has been in as many mock drafts to the Seahawks as some of the other guys. So he's going off the board a little bit. You guys will have to stick around. Todd, thank you very much. It was great to see you.
My pleasure.
All right, that's coming up next. It's Brock and Salk.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Well, it's not a surprise. We're having trouble getting rid of Tom. He's a talker. Tom's got a lot to say. And it's all good, man. When you listen to Todd Lewicki talk about the future of this NHL franchise, about the future of hockey in Seattle and the downtown development and all of it, don't you kind of catch the fever? When you hear his description there of what hockey players are and how they're going to add to the community, does anything get you more pumped?
I think he knows this, and he spoke about the people here and the essence of this community. I think he really knows that an outsider coming in is not a great deal.
Yeah.
That, you know, and I think there was a lot of fear and trepidation, and certainly the Soto folks play to that, that here's our own, right? Here is Hanson, here's our own guy. Here's Ballmer, he's our own guy. And I don't want Ken Behring. I don't want any outside. I want an insider. This community wants an insider. And you don't connect the way that he connects with people. You can't fake what he just did for 25 minutes. He understands, I think, the essence of a lot of us because he was ingrained here.
And I'm reading a lot of the text messages, and a lot of them are fired up right now, which is great. And then there's a few people saying, well, Sonics, basketball. Guys, there's nothing new to ask. There is no basketball team until a basketball team's available. There's no other conversation.
Yes.
When a team is either ready to move or the league is ready to expand, this group is as poised as any to get a team. Whether it's Dave, and David Bonderman sat here in the same seat that Todd was in a couple of months ago and said, yes, I want to own the basketball team if and when it comes here. I'm willing to buy it.
It is inevitable. But
there's no team. There's nothing to talk about. The only answer he can give in a limited amount of time is very simple. As soon as a team becomes available, we're in.
Yes.
But there's no team.
And unlike anything else.
And that's not their fault. It's not anybody's fault.
Unlike anything else, we will have everything in place.
Yes.
You will have a thriving building. You have a unique experience. You will have everything to say to these other owners in the league.
Yes.
The other NBA owners, like, yeah, you know what? It's inevitable. And the right guys are in place at the right time. Let's make this thing.
We can move on from that. But unfortunately, I wish there was something to say other than there's no team available. And as soon as there is, you know, trust, I really believe this group has delivered on every one of their promises thus far, and I have no reason to believe they won't continue to, at least as of now. So, good stuff. I like hearing about the GM stuff and where they're going to go, and that is the most important thing they've got to hire. But I really believe that whoever does color commentary on TV is going to be right behind them, because that job, that's who's going to have to teach you on a night-to-night basis.
You want me to teach you how to do the analyst thing?
Why don't you do it right now?
The color?
With the 18th pick in the NFL draft...
Brock Heward's draft profile. The names worth watching for the Seahawks' first-round pick. Every morning at 8:30 leading up to the draft.
The Seattle Seahawks select...
Rashawn Evans.
I like this dude a lot, man. I'm going to put together my favorite players in college football list next week, and I probably could have easily lumped him on that list and not for the 18th pick in this draft, but I simply like him too much. He's the one guy, Mike, speaking of analyst, okay, and just what your eyes see and bringing it to life. He's the one defensive player outside of Bradley Chubb this year where I'm constantly rewinding the tape. Man, look at this guy. That I'm getting in our production meetings, right, and talking about other teams and other guys, and inevitably Alabama comes up, right? They're playing somebody that we saw this season. I didn't see Rashawn in person this season, but I saw him 10 times on tape because I'm watching the other opponents, and I'm like, hey, Bob, look at this guy. Watch this dude's helmet right here. Bam! Watch it snap. Watch his neck just snap. Bam! Watch his whole body, like a lightning bolt, just went through this guy's chest. Watch this guy jolt people, offensive linemen, guards, tight ends, running backs, unlike anybody else other than Bradley Chubb on tape this season. That's Rashawn Evans. There's higher-ranked linebackers in this class that run faster, that look prettier. You know, that's part of Rashawn's challenge a little bit. Why he's not escalated that point. He didn't run a 40, right? He didn't run 40 at the combine, so that tells he's probably a 40-time 4.65 guy. Maybe even a 4.7 electronically. But on game day, He's 4-4. And on game day, most importantly, he wrecks things. And then even beyond that, when we talk about just the leadership that has to come on this team, of just the hungry and the want to, it's pretty cool. Brian McFadden was talking about him, what he means in that Bama locker room that is full of a bunch of young studs and a bunch of stars. I think this really kind of escalates the essence of who this player is.
He's a beast. He's a beast. He's a combination of Tim Williams and Reuben Foster from a year ago. And I say that because he has the ability to be their best edge rusher. And he's also the alpha male on that team.
Love alpha.
He is the lead dog there in that defense. And he plays with a lot of gut and glory. And you have to like that from the defensive side. And the thing I would like to emphasize is how smart he is and how good of a technician he is.
Okay.
And all that is very true. It's why Pete's loved Alabama defensive lineman, and he's told us that. You're not having to grow. It's not like my hockey learning curve. Right? These guys understand the nuance. They understand the technique. They're coached by some of the best defensive minds in college football, and they come in ready to go. And it's why C.J. Mosley's come into the league. Why Reuben Foster, while being an absolute idiot and loser off of it, is a pretty dominant player on it. These guys know how to play and play physically. Rashawn's 6'3". He's 235 pounds. As I referenced, he didn't run a 40. His vertical is 30. That is like a gigantic red flag. That is not Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll wants Bobby Wagner's running 4.5 at 250 to jump out of the gym. KJ Wright, that's 6'5 and 250 and as long and as athletic. This will be outside of the box just a little bit from an explosive, just physical fiber explosive standpoint. It would not be outside the box at all for finding a dog. And someone that wants to rip the other guy's face off. And wants to do it with pads on and do it every single week and never tires of doing it. And this is a position, Mike. We look at a lot of a roster. This is not a need. Bobby and KJ are there. Bobby is the voice moving forward. They have not filled below those guys for years. They've tried to draft late. They tried to bring priority free agents. Last year, they tried to bring Will Hoyt and Garvin. They have not added to that linebacker room at all. At all. And, man, what I think if for KJ and Bobby and Ken Norton, the new D coordinator, you bring someone with some real juice in that building, in that room, to further invigorate and add depth and come in into other packages and play right away. Yeah, man, I'm intrigued by this guy. He's a trade down. He's going to be a late first round pick, but somebody's going to get him, and he's going to be a Pro Bowl caliber player for somebody in this league.
All right, we're talking Rashawn Evans, linebacker out of Alabama's Brock's draft profile for the day, as we're only 6 days away from the first round of the draft. You worry at all about Alabama linebackers specifically, given the types of defensive lines that play in front of them?
To a degree. I think that's a fair question. Yeah, because it comes at times life pretty easy. But it's also you've got to make plays. We're going to two gap, and you got to come in here and you got to fill. Mm-hmm. And the tape just doesn't lie. He is snap, crackle, pop. Right? It is just, and it doesn't matter who's coming at him. And I love those defensive players. I'm probably a little biased from a QB perspective, or at least not biased. That's just my perspective. And I look at corners as those that take the ball away. Those are the elite guys. When I look at linebackers, I looked at a lot of them in my life. I was under center, and I was looking at a lot of them. And Dave Wyman yesterday, when I did the afternoon show with him, I looked at linebackers' eyes. Like, those guys just want to hit, and they want to physically impose their will, and he's a difference maker in that way.
All right, well, the NFL draft is going to be Thursday. You don't want to miss any of our coverage here on 710 by signing up for exclusive NFL draft text alerts. Here's what you do. Text DRAFT to 710-710. You'll get updates from our draft lounge throughout all 3 days. In addition, you also get a text after every Seahawks move to keep you up to date round by round. So text the word DRAFT to 710-710. Don't forget, tune into the draft lounge at 710sports.com. Is Taylor back there? Howdy. Were we able to figure out that thing we were trying to do with the text machine?
Yeah, we'll get that done next week.
Really? All right,
yeah,
awesome. That'll be pretty sweet. Okay, so here's what you do. Text, I can't even tell you all about it. It's that good. Text DRAFT to 710-710. And watch, we're going to be on video the whole time, man. All kinds of video coverage of the NFL draft this year.
That'll be a blast.
That's going to be a lot of fun. 710sports.com is where you will go for that. All right, there's a ton of news. There's good news, bad news, no news, and what I would refer to as huge news. Next on Brock and Salk.
Veritas Distilling's BSB Lounge at the ballpark. When you hear the side is retired, we're referring to those old guys taking shots of BSB at the side of the bar.
You can't spell baseball without BSB.
Veritas Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
Hey, this is Danny O'Neill from the Danny Dave and Moore Show. Thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. I'd really appreciate it if you checked out Danny Dave and Moore. We're kind of charming, very fun. It's every afternoon from 3 to 7. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Saw.
I think Brock's kind of catching the whole hockey fever after listening to Todd. Just hearing about what those hockey players are like and the kind of guys that go out there and play that sport. I can see it's kind of got your juices flowing.
Yeah, it was a little surreal, though.
Yeah.
It was 2004 last year, so almost 15 years ago. Martha Fuller was his COO there with the Seahawks, and I sat in their office, right? I said, Todd, can I have a meeting with you? Because I knew how impressive he was. You sit down with him, you feel, you know, just how much wisdom he has. So what do you think? You know, I'm thinking about this real estate thing and Vulcan Real Estate, and Paul's got the real estate. And, you know, he introduced me to a few people. And ultimately, I did real estate, but ultimately, I love sports. And I said to him off the air, could you ever imagine I'd be doing this, doing a sports radio show? And he says, yeah, I'm kind of glad you're doing that and not the commercial real estate thing, to be honest with you.
Let's see what's in the news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Seahawks are scheduled to play 5 primetime games next year, awesome. 4 of them at home.
Awesome. Good. Good. Love it. Love it. It's representative of all of you. What Todd Lewicki said about you all out there, you the fans that are so passionate about this thing, I think that is good news. What did we set the over-under? 2.5?
Yeah.
2.5? Come on, man. It doesn't work that way in the NFL. They don't have that short of memory, certainly from a scheduling and programming standpoint, in a stadium that is always alive, and matchups with Richard Sherman, and matchups with the Rams, and matchups with the Vikings, and matchups with Aaron Rodgers. Of course, there's going to be prime time. You're going to see a bunch of it in your building.
Four at home is great, though. That's a huge advantage for the Seahawks. I think that should help them this year. This is all good news. I'm excited for the Pac-12 schedule unveiling for the footballs. We're going to watch that to get. I mean, that's going to be a big deal, right? Where they unveil the schedule and what time all the games are. And we still get to.
Do you know that Clemson, that Clemson spring game Howdy and I went to last weekend with 50,000 people? I bet you, I'll add it up when it's said and done. You could add up every Pac-12 spring game, every one of them, the attendance of all of them.
Won't be 50.
And I don't think it'll equal 50.
Yeah, I think you may very well be right. This is all great news on the Seahawks. I think the schedule looks pretty good for them. And yeah, it's a little tough at the beginning with a bunch of road games, but you don't see franchise quarterbacks early, and you get a ton of primetime games. You get to play a lot of home games late. I actually think it looks pretty good.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Seahawks GM John Schneider told Danny David Moore yesterday that Earl Thomas reportedly will not hold out regardless of his contract status.
Yeah, let me just play it for you real quick just so you guys understand. Here's John Schneider yesterday.
I was informed that he would not hold out. Yeah, but that was not his intention, according to his representation.
I think that's great news. Whether it's true or not, I have no idea, but I think it's great news. I think this helps John in a bunch of different ways. And if he's looking to trade Earl, this should help with the leverage in that, because if Dallas or Cleveland or whomever else is looking to deal with him, is say, well, look, you guys have to make this move. He's not going to show up. You don't want that on your conscience. You don't want to deal with the disruption. Come on, make us a deal. John can say whatever. He's going to show up. I've been told by his representatives that he's going to show up. The public all thinks it. So come on. Make us a deal that's on our terms, not on yours. And so hopefully this helps him get what he wants. And if Earl does, if they don't end up trading him by the time the draft rolls around, good. Hopefully this won't be disruptive and you can either sign him to a long-term extension or play out the string without him being a problem. I think it's great, great, great news.
Good banter for us leads to some good conversation. This is no news. When I hear the words intend to and according to, no news.
Wow.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Brock called the shutdown.
When I hear JS start talking legalese, that's exactly right. Now, if he'd have done it in his southern drawl, you know, and not use words like intend or according to, then it's more believable.
Mm.
No news.
All right.
Rick Riz is missing his first road trip in 44 years.
Heartbreaking news.
To have surgery on his torn bicep. 44 years.
Oh, Ricky. Ricky, not my Ricky. Yeah, your Ricky just tore his biceps, tend to playing, just like old Simsy tore his Achilles playing. So, bad news.
This basketball game seems to have been the worst game of all time.
They're not ever
going to
do that again. Let's be very
Riz
clear. Y'all
hurt,
worried about
Sims
that.
Hurt.
You're worried about the logo on a hat. Be more worried about a basketball
gym. I heard
gym.
Yesterday that there was a member of the Mariners coaching staff that was also injured in this game.
Never going to happen.
It sounds like it was a complete disaster. Old men shouldn't go out there and try to play basketball without getting ready for that.
Bad news.
Feel really bad for Rick. Who was pointing out yesterday, this will be the first time there's been any extended time since the franchise started, that neither Niehaus nor Riz will be calling games. Crazy.
Wow. Now, the only thing here is how far down the injury list. If Gary has something with the throat or, right. you know, Aaron has something with a knee, like how far down before the old Brock and Salt?
Are they going to, will you make your call?
I mean, well, we did it. I mean, we did it in the spring, right?
What will you say after a strikeout?
You know what I'll say.
What is it?
You sit down!
Good news, bad news, no news.
UW will play their 2018 spring game tomorrow.
I mean, unfortunately, based on what Brock was saying a few minutes ago, for most people out there, that's no news. I still can't figure out what to make of the way college football fans treat their teams in this neck of the woods. Mm. They love the team. They're passionate about the Huskies. They talk about them a lot. Brock, you've mentioned it before. It's the most common question you get. Hey, what's going on with the Huskies, this, that, and the other? But they don't really show up in large numbers for this. At least they haven't in the past.
Yeah.
And this is a team that's probably going to be in the preseason top 10. So as much as I love to blame Larry Scott for all this stuff, mm-hmm. I also think that he's got a problem, which is he just doesn't have a fan base that's quite as rabid as the group that's in the SEC, the Big Ten, or even the ACC or Big 12.
Yeah, they're not tearing the doors off of their offices down there and clamoring for more and more and more. I'll tell you, I loved it in Danny O'Neill. I see Danny in there. Hey, Danny. Danny, you remember way back when in the spring games back in the day in the 90s? I mean, the spring game had, you'd have 30, 40, 50,000 people at the spring game. Do you...
Yeah, I love the spring game. How it's changed over the years.
Yeah.
It started getting ruined when Rick Neuheisel stopped actually having a game.
Yes.
And they just started like having a certain number of possessions. Mm. I'm planning to go. My buddy Kyle's coming up. You know Kyle. We went to the Peach Bowl together.
Yeah, we had a blast.
He's bringing his son Caden down. And we're going to go see it. I love the spring game.
Yeah, and it's a bummer because back then it was an evaluation tool. It really was when you're playing in front of 30, 40, 50,000 people. Down at Clemson, as we saw last weekend, to see how your freshmen are going to show up. These young freshmen QB, 4,000 or 5,000 people out there doesn't create that kind of juice.
You can ask Kyle about our late night walk through the streets of Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You guys did. I had shingles, so I went to bed.
Yeah, these things happen. Thanks, Danny.
Thank you, Dio. Why'd I call him Dio?
No, that's all right.
Never called him Dio. He could be Dio.
Yeah, he's Dio.
Do you know that Dave Wyman had a great line yesterday?
He goes,
yeah, one time I was hosting, and we were going to break to end the show, and I said, welcome. Because I was so out, like, welcome.
Radio will do that to you.
Hard outs will do that.
Radio will do that to you. All right, that's good news, bad news, no news. Every day at 8:45, taking you through all the stories in the news and what they mean for a Seattle sports fan. Let's do this. The NFL schedule came out. We'll talk a little bit more about it in depth in a few minutes. But if you want first dibs on tickets to the 2018 Seahawks season, we're going to give you guys a chance to win a pair of tickets to any regular season Seahawks home game of your choice. So any game you want at home in the regular season. Plus, we'll add in two VIP tickets to the Seahawks exclusive draft day party next week in Bellevue. And it is exclusive. Brock and I will be there.
Mm.
Lydia will be there.
Most important.
I think that's how you know it is exclusive.
Yep.
So here's what you do. Go to 710sports.com/win. 710sports.com/win. Enter the code word Hawks, H-A-W-K-S. Do it, though, before 10 o'clock by the end of the show to be entered to win. The contest and rules are 710sports.com/win. You can find them there. You got to be 21 or over. And don't forget, you can go to Seahawks.com/tickets for the 2018 schedule. Tickets are on sale now. Go to 710sports.com. And you can find this. Enter the code word Hawks. All right, Brock, to that schedule, let's speak a little bit more on that. And you have three specific thoughts on the future of Earl Thomas. It's next on Brock and Salk.